The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the July-August issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to go to Who's Who in Sports, page 8, and we're going to go to all three lines this evening. We're going to start with Sam Kerr, Chelsea FC forward. His height is 5'6". He was born September 10th, 1993 in hometown Fremantle, Australia. Kerr led the FA Women's Super League with 21 goals in 22 games in the 2021 season. Before joining Chelsea, Kerr led the NWSL in scoring 3 seasons in a row. For Sky Blue FC in 2017 and the Chicago Red Stars in 2018 and 19. She is the leading goal scorer in NWSL history. But did you know, Kerr is the captain of Australia's national team. The squad's nickname is the Metal Matildas, after an Australian folk song. Next we have Zach LaVine, guard of Chicago Bulls. His height is 6'5", his weight is 200 pounds. He was born May 10, 1995 in hometown Renton, Washington. During a season in which he averaged 27.4 points per game, LaVine was named to his first All-Star team. Known primarily as a dunker early in his career, LaVine shot a career-high 50.7%, including 41.9% from three-point range. He was a 2014 first-round pick of the Timberwolves after one season at UCLA. But did you know, the only Bulls player to average more than 27.4 points per game in a season is Michael Jordan, who did it 11 times with a best of 37.1. Next we have Daryl Dike, USMT forward. His height is 6'2", his weight is 220 pounds. He was born June 3, 2000, in his hometown, Edmond, Oklahoma. Dike earned his first cap for the U.S. on January 31, 2021, against Trinidad and Tobago. After scoring 8 goals in 17 games as a rookie for Orlando City SC, he was loaned last season to Barnsley of the English Football League Championship, where he scored 9 goals. He was named the most outstanding player of the 2019 NCAA tournament for Virginia. But did you know Virginia's record streak of 39 straight NCAA tournament appearances was snapped in 2020? Next we have Crystal Dangerfield of the Minnesota Lynx, guard. Her height is 5'5". She was born May 11, 1998 in her hometown, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. A second-round draft pick out of UConn in 2020, Dangerfield went on to win the WNBA Rookie of the Year award last season, capturing 44 of 47 votes. She led the Lynx in scoring, 16.2 points per game, and was third in the league in free throw shooting, 92.2%, as Minnesota had the WNBA's fourth best record. But did you know Dangerfield was the first player not selected in the first round to be named WNBA Rookie of the Year since the award was established in 1998? Next, we have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. of the Toronto Blue Jays, first baseman. His height is 6'2", his weight is 250 pounds. He was born March 16, 1999, in his hometown, Don Gregorio, Dominican Republic. Through 45 games, Guerrero was leading the American League with a .632 slugging percentage. He hit 13 home runs and drove in 36 runs while batting .331. Guerrero made his much-anticipated debut with the Blue Jays in 2019, hitting .272 with 15 home runs and finishing 7th in American League Rookie of the Year voting. But did you know Guerrero's father hit 449 home runs in his 16-year major league career and was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2018. Anastasia Webb, Oklahoma Sooners gymnast. Her height is 5'5". She was born June 15, 1999, in her hometown, Morton Grove, Illinois. As a senior, Webb won gold medals in the all-around floor exercise and vault at the 2021 NCAA Gymnastics Championships. She also won a bronze in the balance beam. Webb helped lead Oklahoma, the 2019 national champions, to a 30-2 record and a national runner-up finish. But did you know there are four apparatuses used in the women's artistic gymnastics? Balance beam, uneven bars, floor exercises, and vault. Last line, Justin Jefferson, Minnesota Vikings wide receiver. His height is 6'1", his weight is 202 pounds. He was born June 16, 1999 in his hometown, St. Rose, Louisiana. As a rookie in 2020, Jefferson had 1,400 receiving yards, the most ever by a first-year player. He hauled in 88 passes and scored 7 touchdowns, becoming just one of two rookies named to the Pro Bowl. In 2019, he led the nation in receptions, 111, as a junior at LSU. The Vikings selected him with the 22nd pick. But did you know the previous record holder for receiving yard by a rookie was Anquan Boldin, who had 1,377 for the Cardinals in 2003. Hideki Matsuyama, PGA Tour golfer. His height is 5'11", his weight is 198 pounds. He was born February 25, 1992, in his hometown, Aimi, Japan. At the Masters in April, Matsuyama became the first golfer from Japan to win one of the sport's four majors. He led by 4 strokes heading into the final round and held off Will Zalatoris to win by 1 shot. As of May, Matsuyama was ranked number 14 in the world. But did you know the first player from Asia to win one of golf's four majors was Yang Yong-un, who won the 2019 PGA Championship by overtaking Tiger Woods in the final round? And finally, Cole Caulfield, Montreal Canadiens right wing. His height is 5'7", his weight is 162 pounds. He was born January 2, 2001, hometown, Massini, Wisconsin. Drafted 15th by the Canadiens in 2019, Caulfield then played 2 collegiate seasons for Wisconsin. He won the Hobie Baker Award as the top college player in 21. Caulfield then signed with Montreal and made his debut on April 26th. He scored overtime goals in 2 of his first 5 games. Only 3 players had more than 2 all season. But did you know the Hobie Baker Award is named for a former Princeton hockey player and World War I hero? No one should host the Olympics. The Olympics are like a hidden camera prank. It's great fun until it happens to you. The people of Japan are not happy that their country is hosting this summer's games. A poll released in May revealed that more than 80% of Japan opposed the Olympics proceedings as planned, with the 43% wanting them canceled altogether. Who can blame them? Spending tens of millions of dollars to host people from other countries seems like a confusion of priorities as the country struggles to distribute COVID-19 vaccines. Fans hoping for fewer controversial post-pandemic games, however, should know that anti-Olympic demonstrations have already taken place in Paris, host of the 2024 games, and Los Angeles in 2028. While the French protest group has a far superior name to the L.A. one, Saccage 2024, which means rampage in French, versus No Olympics L.A., their grievances are similar. Both groups fear that temporary accommodations made for temporary events will have lasting repercussions on the city's permanent residents. The French group highlights the ecological impact of building new structures on previously green spaces, while the LA organizers worry that the games will increase homelessness in the city. Take one glance at the stadium graveyard from past games and their points start to make sense. Rio de Janeiro, host of the 2016 Olympics, has already let many of its stadiums fall into disrepair after just 5 years. While photos like the one on the previous page look like stills from an awesome post-apocalyptic video game, they're a harsh reminder of money that might have been better spent. Montreal's debt from the 1976 Olympics lasted well into the 21st century, and its Olympic Stadium, formerly the home of the Expos, had become a white elephant, a structure too expensive to maintain or destroy. So why in the world of sports do countries want, let alone bid, on the privilege of hosting the games? National pride plays a big role. The Olympics are an opportunity to present a country in its best light to a worldwide TV audience. And if run efficiently, the events can be a profitable tourist attraction. Ironically, given the current protests, the previous Tokyo and LA Olympics have long been held up as models for the benefits the event can provide. The 1964 Tokyo Games showed Japan as a peaceful modern superpower following a post-war malaise. The 1984 LA Games, which relied heavily on the city's existing sports infrastructure, turned a $250 million profit. But the world has changed since 1984. Maybe Olympics just aren't worth the trouble anymore. Entertainment options are more fractured than ever. The 2018 Winter Olympics were the least watched on record in the United States. It's hard to stake your national pride on an opening ceremony if kids around the world aren't going to look up from watching Rubik's Cube-solving videos on Twitch. Still, the Olympics are cool. The Summer and Winter Games are moments to a shared humanity and a universal love of creating big flames with smaller flames. Can the Olympics continue to inspire without getting bogged down in an endless cycle of protests? Yes, if they follow my simple plan for a permanent Olympic venue. If the games always happened in the same place, the cost would be lower. So who gets to be the full-time host? That all-time medal leader? That'd be the United States of America, of course. But that's not super convenient for the majority of the world's countries, which are in other hemisphere. So let's go for the next geographical center of all the countries on Earth. Calculated in 2003 to be north 40 degrees, 50 east, 34 degrees, 34, a.k.a. Turkey's Excellent province. Sure, it's mountainous and landlocked, but who watches sailing anyway? And I've already thought of a great Winter Olympics venue that's equally central on the globe, the South Pole. There's already even a bunch of different countries' flags down there. What could go wrong? August birthdays. August 1st, Diamondback starter Madison Bumgarner is 32. August 4th, Washington Spirit and USWNT defender Kelly O'Hara is 33 years old. August 12th, Greek tennis star Stefanos Tsitsipas turns 23. And August 21st, Bucks receiver Mike Evans is 28 years old. Future star Kayla Gomez, birthplace El Paso, Texas. Birth date September 5th, 2003, and sport, boxing. Kayla Gomez, a 13-time youth national champion, has something most fighters don't literally have in their corner, her mom. Kayla, 17, is trained by both her mother, Crystal Aceves, who's also an amateur boxer, and her grandmother, Cindy. My mom has helped me through my worst days, my best days, Kayla says. Our relationship was great, but now it's deeper. Kayla won her latest title in the 112-pound division at the USA Boxing National Championships in April, improving her record to 55-4, and has her sights set on the 2024 Olympics. One for the ages, gymnastics. In August 2016, Simone Biles stood atop the podium in Rio de Janeiro, beaming and holding up four fingers. She had just won gold in the floor exercise, sending her home from her first Olympics with four gold medals and one bronze. It was a masterful performance. But looking back on it, Biles says she barely enjoyed those games. She was so focused on pleasing the rest of the world. In the balance beam final, she missed the landing on a front tuck and grabbed the beam, an automatic 0.5-point deduction that led to her third-place finish. I was so happy that I even medaled because of the mistake that I had, but I felt so ashamed because people were mad that I ruined their headline of five gold medals, she says. The Tokyo Olympics give Biles a chance to add to her haul and maybe have a little more fun, but the postponement of the game for a year last summer because of the COVID-19 pandemic, presented another challenge. Biles has been racing against time, trying to force one last transcendent performance from a body that is ready to find a different career. Now that body would have to endure an additional 12 months. She told her training partner, "I just don't know if I can do this for another year." Well, she did, of course, and it was a typical GOAT-worthy year. In May at the United States Classic, she landed a Yurchenko double pike vault, something no woman gymnast had ever so much as attempted. The next month, she won her seventh all-round title at the United States Gymnastics Championship and added gold in three individual disciplines as well. Biles heads to Tokyo as the owner of 30 world championship and Olympic medals. She also has four skills named after her, the kind of dominance that makes opponents agree that second place is a gold medal in the non-Biles division. She needs four more medals to pass Vitaly Sherbo, who competed for the Soviet Union as the most decorated gymnast of all time. She knows it won't be easy. Even before the delay, Biles would have been an adult in a teenager sport. She was 23 last summer. Only four female gymnasts have won gold at age 23 or older since 1972, and the oldest individual all-around gold medalist since then was 20. While Biles is old for a gymnast, she knows she is still young enough to have a whole other life in front of her. She dreams of her own TV show, and she knows she wants to work with foster kids in some capacity, in a nod to her own upbringing. Her parents adopted her and her sister, Adria. Yeah, Biles says, that's a big task, making sure it goes up from there. Don't bet against her. Softball, they're back! In 2005, the International Olympic Committee voted to drop softball after the 2008 games, largely because the United States was so dominant. Funny, then, that the United States didn't win gold at that last game, as Japan pulled off an upset in the championship game. The losing pitcher in that game, Cat Osterman, retired in 2015. 10 years later, the IOC brought softball back, and Osterman wasted little time unretiring. The 38-year-old has shown little sign of rust. Through her first six appearances for the national team in 2021, she didn't give up an earned run in 26 and two-thirds innings. Welcome back. Hall of Clue, Class of 2021. Last summer, we introduced you to our Hall of Cool, a place where we enshrine what we love about sports, including Megan Rapinoe, James Harden's beard, and the T-shirt cannon. Allow us to present our second class of inductees. His Airness, Michael Jordan. We like Mike. Was there anything that Michael Jordan couldn't do? He led the Bulls to six NBA championships. He threw down some of the most iconic dunks in history. He followed his dream and spent a season playing minor league baseball. He even helped the Looney Tunes defeat a team of aliens in Space Jam. MJ's tongue-wagging, high-flying play helped make the NBA what it is today, an incredibly popular star power league. And he was on the first ever cover of Sports Illustrated Kids. All in all, we'd say that's pretty cool. Inside the park home runs. Batter takes a huge swing at a pitch and crushes it over the fence. Home run, yay! More like yawn. When a hitter knocks one out of the park, he jogs leisurely around the bases. It happens all the time. What doesn't happen nearly as often is the most exciting play in baseball, the inside-the-park home run. A batter has to be going top speed all the way around the bases, and the farther he advances, the more anticipation builds and builds for fans. Bonus points if there's a close play at the plate. Jaromir Jagr. Asked whether Ricky Henderson belonged in Cooperstown, Bill James said, if you could split him in two, you'd have two Hall of Famers. Jaromir Jagr could split into three Hall of Famers. Currently in his fifth decade playing professional hockey, the 49-year-old Czech winger has been a trendsetter on everything from mullets to midnight workouts. In 2015 and 16, Jagr led the Panthers with 66 points while playing with center Alexei Barkov, who was born just before Jagr's sixth NHL season began. That's cool. Becky Hammond. On December 30th, 2020, history was made when Spurs coach Greg Popovich got thrown out of a game. That's not the historic part. Pop gets tossed all the time. But when, as he left, he turned the reins over to assistant Becky Hammond, making her the first woman to be the acting head coach in league history. The former WNBA star is more than just an inspirational barrier breaker. She's one of the best basketball minds around. As future Hall of Famer Pau Gasol put it, Becky Hammond can coach NBA basketball, period. Whether on the ice or the pitch, defending the net requires the right training, equipment, and experience. Or in the case of these emergency goalies, incredible determination. In case of emergency, number one, David Ayers, Carolina Hurricanes. Every detail of this 42-year-old's debut seems straight out of a movie script. Both Hurricanes goalies got hurt mid-game, meaning Ayers had to get ready in a hurry. He wore a Toronto blue helmet and pads with his red jersey as he faced off against his hometown team. He let in goals on the first two shots he faced in the second period, suggesting an impending disaster. Then Ayers emerged from the dressing room and turned in a perfect 20 minutes, making 8 saves and becoming the first emergency goaltender to record a win in NHL history. The only thing unsurprising about Ayers' story is that a Disney film adaptation really is in the works. Number 2, Scott Foster, Chicago Blackhawks. Ayers might have an undefeated record, but Foster boasts a 1.1000 save percentage. Like most emergency goalies, Foster is a local amateur the team invites to their games just in case. The Blackhawks had a 4-goal lead on the Jets in 2018 when Foster entered the game in the first period, but like a great closer in baseball, he didn't need the cushion. Number 3, Mia Hamm, USWNT. She's arguably the most famous forward in the history of women's soccer, which makes it hard to imagine Hamm in net. With the United States leading Denmark 2-0 in a 1995 World Cup group stage match, Brianna Scurry picked up a controversial red card for stepping outside the box on a clear. Hamm grabbed some gloves and got in goal, only to be greeted with 8 minutes of stoppage time. Hamm made 2 saves, however, and preserved the clean sheet. Number 4, Lester Patrick, New York Rangers. Before backups, teams would sub in any nearby netminder, but when Ranger Lauren Chabot took a puck to the eye in the 1928 Stanley Cup Finals, the Montreal Maroons refused to let their opponent use any of the pro goalies in attendance. So New York's 44-year-old coach Lester Patrick suited up and told his players, "Boys, don't let an old man down." They didn't, winning the game and the series. Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, Vanderbilt Commodores. If there's one thing that Vanderbilt's pitching duo of Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter prove, is that you can thrive without fitting the prototype of a staff ace. Rocker looks best suited to chase quarterbacks across the SEC. Leiter could reasonably be mistaken for an intramural shortstop on his way to class. But on the mound, this odd couple is anything but out of place. Opponents facing Vanderbilt in weekend series in 2021 endured a pair of vastly different yet similarly frustrating experiences. Rocker, a junior right-hander, would take the ball in the first game. Standing 6'5" and weighing 245 pounds, he sported a cut-off compression shirt during warm-ups while hurling fastballs that approached triple digits. After working himself into a lather as first pitch neared, the real Rocker show would begin. Rocker challenges hitters on every pitch, grunting and celebrating his way through each start. He doesn't throw to the plate so much as he attacks it. "I'm going to make you look stupid, or if you're going to make me look stupid," he says, simple as that. For the most part, it has been the former over the course of his Vanderbilt career. Rocker struck out 114 batters in 99 and two-thirds innings as a freshman 2 years ago, including 19 in a no-hitter in the 2019 Super Regional against Duke. He finished the season by striking out 11 in 6 1/3 innings against Michigan in the College World Series Finals, earning Most Outstanding Player honors as the Commodores won their second national title. This year, he had 89 strikeouts and just 15 walks in his first 64 innings, so it's natural to exhale after an evening against Rocker. But there was no reprieve for Vandy's opponents upon arriving at the ballpark the next day. Leiter doesn't boast the same intimidation factor as his counterpart. The sophomore stands just over 6 feet, spending his warm-up draped in a team jacket. Leiter doesn't yell on the mound. Any grunt is only faintly audible. His glove covers his face for much of the time he's on the mound. While Rocker revs his engine, Leiter provides a steady hum. Though perhaps Leiter is more like his fellow ace than he's given credit for. "Don't be fooled to think that is a passive dude," says Al Leiter, Jack's father and a stormy Major League Baseball star pitcher. "Internally, he wants to rip your face off." The younger Leiter's stoic demeanor served him well in his first full season with the Commodores. Since the 2020 campaign ended before SEC games began, he didn't make his conference debut until March 20 of this year, when he struck out 16 in a no-hitter against South Carolina. The previous night, Rocker struck out 14 in 8 innings in a 3-2 win. Leiter then tossed 7 additional no-hit innings before being pulled against Missouri 6 days later. He had thrown 101 pitches. The Tigers broke up the no-no in the ninth. Leiter allowed just 3 earned runs in his first 49 innings in 2021, a stretch that included 84 strikeouts. Asked Jack about the best parts of his arsenal, and he quickly pivots to a discussion of his thought process. "My mental focus is probably my best skill," Jack says. I was always the smallest guy on the mound, but my dad always told me, "You're going to hit that growth spurt." Once we didn't worry about that, I was able to focus on my mechanics, the mental side of my game. Rocker received a different training than Jack, though his path to Vanderbilt was similarly rigorous. Rocker's dad, Tracy, was a 2-time All-America defensive tackle and the 1988 Outland Trophy winner at Auburn, adding a pair of seasons in the NFL before kicking off a 3-decade coaching career. Kumar cares about the way things are done. He wants to be on time. He remains focused on his goals, Tracy says. He's not perfect, but he knows what it's like to be a leader on good days and bad. For much of his youth, it was assumed Kumar would be a standout defensive end, but he stuck with baseball as well as football into his teenage years. He played a lot of third base, looking like a mini version of Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton at the plate. The idea of pitching arrived almost by accident. Kumar and his mom, Lou, were at a travel tournament when Kumar was 15, and the 16-year-old squad needed a starting pitcher. Kumar took the mound on a whim and started fanning battle with a fastball that caught the eye of coaches and scouts. There's a consistent interplay between Rocker and Leiter, one that's been present since Leiter's first days on campus. Each long toss session is littered with tips and tricks on different grips and arm angles, with collaboration taking precedence over each pitcher's notable competitiveness. There is no debate over who is the team's true ace, no jockeying for attention in the national spotlight. If they had spent the year battling one another for the top pick in the 2021 draft, you never know it by watching them. They both really work to celebrate one another, Coach Tim Corbin says. There's no drama. It's about doing this together. They're about the same thing, driving this team as far as it can go. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.